content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our January 2024 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that at the end of this program as well. This month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of December at the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. We'll begin the program today with a book entitled Holly, It's a Novel by Stephen King. Holly Gibney, one of Stephen King's most compelling and ingeniously resourceful characters, returns in this thrilling novel to solve the gruesome truth behind multiple disappearances in a Midwestern town. Here's the plot. Stephen King's Holly marks the triumphant return of beloved King character Holly Gibney. Readers have witnessed Holly's gradual transformation from a shy but also brave and ethical recluse in Mr. Mercedes to Bill Hodges' partner in Finders Keepers to a full-fledged smart and occasionally tough private detective in The Outsider. In King's brand new novel, Holly is on her own and up against a pair of unimaginably depraved and brilliantly disguised adversaries. When Penny Dahl calls the Finders Keepers Detective Agency, hoping for help locating her missing daughter, Holly is reluctant to accept the case. Her partner Pete has COVID. Her very complicated mother has just died, and Holly is meant to be on leave. But something in Penny Dahl's desperate voice makes it impossible for Holly to turn her down. Mere blocks from where Bonnie Dahl disappeared, live professors Rodney and Emily live professors Rodney and Emily Harris. They are the picture of bourgeois respectability. Married octogenarians devoted to each other and semi-retired lifelong academics. But they are harboring an unholy secret in the basement of their well-kept, book-lined home, one that may be related to Bonnie's disappearance. And it will prove nearly impossible to discover what they are up to. They are savvy, they are patient, and they are ruthless. Holly must summon all her formidable talents to outthink and outmaneuver the shockingly twisted professors in this chilling new masterwork from Stephen King. Once again, it's called Holly, a novel by Stephen King featuring the character Holly Gibney. Now let's turn to a book by James Patterson, a regular popular author on this program. This one is entitled 12 Months to Live. Long Island attorney, locked in the most crucial trial of her career, learns that she has, well, you know, all things considered, things have been going pretty well for Jane Smith. Sure, she's twice divorced. She's not all that close to her sister, Bridget, who also has cancer, and Rob Jacobson, the client accused of killing Mitch and Kathy Gates and their teenage daughter. Laurel is a lying piece of trash. But Jane and her investigator, tavern owner Jimmy Cunniff, have just been asked to look again into the high-profile Carson case involving another family of three who were shot dead some years ago. Although she's far from certain that Jacobson is innocent, Jane's never yet lost a case, and she doesn't intend to lose this one. She responds to the mountain of forensic evidence presented by Suffolk County D.A. Kevin Ahern, who's also never lost a case, by crowing that there's no motive until suddenly she's confronted with a compelling motive and a whole collection of lies that bring her up against crooked ex-cop Joe Champy, who may not have killed himself after all and get Jimmy shot twice and beaten once, as if there were nothing else for him to be doing. Patterson seems entirely absent from this collaboration, which reads a lot more like Lupica and not Top Drawer Lupica. The overstuffed plot never seems any more believable than Jane's damn the torpedoes response to her worsening symptoms. But it's hard not to sympathize with an overstressed attorney who insists on performing herself daily because crazy is kind of my thing. As fast-moving and forgettable as that fly you keep swatting in vain. This is 12 Months to Live, the name of that book, and it is by the very popular author James Patterson. Now let's move on to another book, this one by Kyle Mills. It is called Code Red and is a Mitch Rapp novel. Guns blaze in Syria as Mitch Rapp once again takes it to the bad guys. A few things you need to know about the series hero. He is a highly proficient killer. He's absolutely loyal to the U.S. and he has a strong sense of honor. So when Damian Loza, a billionaire Mexican and the most powerful criminal in the world, calls him for a favor, Rapp can't refuse. I helped him when he desperately needed it, Loza says, and he's the kind of man who'll feel obligated to honor that debt. Until I've repaid my debt to him, Rapp says, he's my boss. Loza wants to know about the growing Captagon business in Western Europe, where the illicit drug causes irreversible brain damage and permanent psychosis in its users. Loza asks Rapp to find out how the Syrians are making huge quantities of the drug economically. Jihadists want to undermine the West, where they were weak, by effectively rotting people's brains because they can never win on a battlefield. Rapp goes to Syria disguised as a wealthy Canadian attorney and learns that the Russians are in charge of exporting the drug to the West. Turns out the Ruskies hate us too. Who knew? Of course, Rapp gets into some bloody gunfights because that's what he does. But at least once the violence is disgusting, when a young man is impaled on an angle iron and is obviously going to die, Rapp bashes him in the forehead. You see, he tells the boy's father, it's okay. He's with God now. Shame on Rapp. Although most of the action takes place in Syria, the interesting put-downs are about the Russians. A Russian general muses, Russia had been revealed for what it was, a starving old woman lashed by the Siberian wind. And Rapp observes, the Russians aren't people who play to win. They play to make everyone else lose. High energy action makes this a mostly enjoyable thriller. It's called Code Red. It is a Mitch Rapp novel, and it was written by Kyle Mills. Now a book by another very popular author that we talk about quite a bit on this program, Sandra Brown. This is a new novel by Sandra Brown called Out of Nowhere. The number one New York Times best-selling author returns with a fast-paced emotional thriller where the lives of a young mother and a high-rolling consultant collide under devastating circumstances, culminating in a desperate manhunt that will change their futures forever. Here's the plot. At a Texas county fair, amidst carousels and a bustling midway, children's book author Ellie Portman is enjoying a rare night out with her favorite cowboy, her two-year-old son, Charlie. But just as they're about to head home, the unthinkable happens. A shooter opens fire into the crowd, causing widespread panic to erupt all around them. Also caught in the melee was a corporate consultant, Calder Hudson. Arrogant, self-centered, and high off his latest career win, he's frustrated and confused when he wakes up in the hospital after undergoing emergency surgery on his arm. The doctor tells him that he was lucky that, as far as gunshot wounds go, he pulled through remarkably well. Others weren't so lucky, which instills in Calder a furious determination to get justice, a goal shared by Ellie. Their chance encounter at the police station leads to a surprising and inexplicable gravitation to one another. But even as the attraction grows, Ellie and Calder can't help but wonder if the unimaginable tragedy that brought them together is too painful and too complicated to sustain, especially while the shooter remains at large. Once again, it's a book called Out of Nowhere, and it's a new one by novelist Sandra Brown. One more. Here's one by James Patterson called Lion and Lamb. Vina Lyon and Cooper Lamb are rival PIs in Philadelphia. In this fun ride, the romance between Cooper and Vina is artfully handled. Endearing characters, including Cooper's two preternaturally clever kids and his Rhodesian Ridgeback puppy. That's all according to Publishers Weekly. Now here's the story. Great storytelling, a spectacular murder case, Kirkus Review says as well, by the way. The plot is, the city is in a state of shock over the fate of two hometown heroes. Eagles starting quarterback Archie Hughes and his even more famous wife, Grammy-winning singer Francine Hughes. One spouse is murdered, the other is suspect number one. Even before the case hits the courtroom, it's the hottest ticket in town. For the defense, Cooper Lamb, private investigator to the stars. For the prosecution, Vina Lyon, a sleuth so bright she's got to wear shades. Between them, they know every secret in Philadelphia. Together, they prove how two wrongs can make a right. They are Lyon and Lamb. And that is the name of this book. It's Lyon and Lamb by the great novelist James Patterson. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. Now let's take a look at a popular book this past month at the Library of Accessible Services, All the Light We Cannot See, a novel by Anthony Doerr. This, by the way, is now a Netflix limited series from producer and director Sean Levy, starring Mark Ruffalo, Hugh Laurie, and newcomer Aria Mia Liberti. Winner of the Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award finalist, the beloved instant New York Times bestseller and New York Times Book Review Top 10 book about a blind French girl and a German boy whose paths collide in occupied France as both try to survive the devastation of World War II. Marie Laurie lives with her father in Paris near the Museum of Natural History, where he works as the master of its thousands of locks. When she is six, Marie Laurie goes blind and her father builds a perfect miniature of their neighborhood home so she can memorize it by touch and navigate her way home. When she is 12, the Nazis occupy Paris, and father and daughter flee to the walled citadel of St. Malo, where Marie-Laure's reclusive great-uncle lives in a tall house by the sea. With them, they carry what might be the museum's most valuable and dangerous jewel. In a mining town in Germany, the orphan Werner grows up with his younger sister, enchanted by a crude radio they find. Werner becomes an expert at building and fixing these crucial new instruments, a talent that wins him a place at a brutal academy for Hitler youth, then a special assignment to track the resistance. More and more aware of the human cost of his intelligence, Werner travels through the heart of the war and finally into St. Malo, where his story and Marie-Laure's converge. Dorr's stunning sense of physical detail and gorgeous metaphors are dazzling, says the San Francisco Chronicle. Deftly interweaving the lives of Marie-Laure and Werner, he illuminates the ways, against all odds, that people try to be good to one another. It was 10 years in the writing, All the Light We Cannot See, is a magnificent, deeply moving novel from a writer whose sentences never fail to thrill. Once again, the book is called All the Light We Cannot See, a novel by Anthony Dorr, and it's a limited series on Netflix these days as well. Now let's turn to a book called Obsessed. It's a Michael Bennett psychological thriller by, once again, James Patterson, writing along with James O'Born. And here's the plot for this one. Obsessed is the sixth Michael Bennett novel that James Patterson has written with James O'Born. The title is more than accurate, and the word obsession can be tagged to several characters in this clever and twisty dark thriller. Young women have gone missing in the New York City area and are now turning up dead. The most real comment in the book occurs early on when the father of one of the missing girls tells Bennett, "If your child is missing, you want the whole world to stop and go look for them." Not only will Bennett take these words to heart, it will propel him to do whatever it takes to get justice for these young ladies and stop the obsessively evil criminal before he shatters the life of another family. The story keeps many suspects in the mix while maintaining suspense levels that make this one an absolute pleasure to consume. One victim is found when her body washes up in the East River. She is identified as Suzanne Morton, a friend of Bennett's daughter, Juliana. It is now personal for Bennett as he realizes that this abduction and cruel murder could just as well have been perpetrated against Juliana. He and his crack team of colleagues use every technique and resource at their disposal to start lining up potential suspects. That is the beauty of Obsessed and any Michael Bennett thriller, the hyper-realistic forensics and gritty intelligence police work that is exhibited in each and every case. It is obvious that Bourne had a successful career as a law enforcement agent, as he brings much of his experience to life on these pages. The spotlight first shines on a privileged, pompous investor named Kyle Banning. Even though some of the deceased and missing women can be tied to him, it turns out that they also have a connection to his troubled brother, high schooler Jaden. We learn that some of the victims worked on the side for an escort agency known for providing the girlfriend experience to their male clientele. This typically refers to an expensive night on a man's arm that does not include sex. If sex were to occur, that would be a separate charge, usually worked out between the escort and their date. Both Banning brothers seem to be associated with this service, in addition to a slew of other men in the New York City area, some of whom need to be looked at more closely by Bennett and his team. There aren't many authors out there with the plotting skills of James Patterson, and Obsessed is some of the finest work he has done. The story keeps many suspects in the mix while maintaining suspense levels that makes this one an absolute pleasure to consume. By the way, this was a commentary and review by Ray Palin. It was done in July of this year. Once again, the book is called Obsessed, and it's a Michael Bennett psychological thriller by James Patterson and James O'Born. Now let's move on to a book by a very, very popular writer. This is a little longer review than normal, but I think it's a good one that you'll enjoy. Let's talk about The Exchange, After the Firm, by John Grisham. John Grisham's The Firm finally has a sequel, but it doesn't read like one. Grisham's latest novel, The Exchange, reunites readers with Mitch McDear, who isn't quite the same hero we fell for all those years ago. In 1991, when John Grisham and his literary creation, The Firm, blasted out of bookstores faster than a Learjet, both the author and the book's protagonist, Mitch McDear, were young, starry-eyed lawyers hanging around Memphis, hungry for success. Writing what he knew was gold for Grisham, the book, his second after A Time to Kill, has sold more than 7 million copies and set the standard for a legal thriller genre. The Firm showed the publishing world how enormous the appetite was for lawyers turned authors who could mix an expert's eye with a fast-plotted good guy versus bad guy scenario with a morally complicated but charming protagonist at its center. Now, a follow-up to the first book there, The Firm, would have been natural, but it didn't happen until just this year, this past year, actually. The Exchange, Grisham's 49th book, is a sequel to The Firm, and it just hit the shelves in 2023. Will the sequel be as good as the original, or will it feel like pinning an extra tail on the prize-winning donkey? Well, will the loose threads be tied, and for a follow-up to The Firm, a book where the women sound as if they were penned by frat boys and the depictions of people of color are cringeworthy. Will the non-white and female characters get a better seat at the table? Well, let's look back at how Grisham first set the scene. As The Firm ended, Mitch McDear, our bootstrapping hero, embodied so naturally by Tom Cruise in the movie, had managed to extract himself from the corrupt tax law firm Bendini, Lambert, and Locke. With the help of his convict brother, a fast-talking secretary, and his schoolteacher wife, Abby, McDear outran the FBI and the mob, handed the feds all they needed for indictments, and pocketed a cool $10 million. The McDears ended up in the Cayman Islands, and while they seemed to have gotten away with it all, it was evident that the chase was on. The Exchange begins in 2005. At 41, Mitch is a middle-aged, moneyed, and eating truffles on pizza. The two Kentucky kids have become rich New York adults with a perfect marriage. Mitch is a partner at the mega firm Scully and Pershing, and living peacefully with Abby and their twin boys. The mob never forgets may have been the oft-repeated threat in The Firm. But for Mitch and this sequel, they forgot. Grisham does take Mitch back to Memphis to poke around a death row case, but it's just an excuse for a meet-up with a former best friend and Bendini associate, Lamar Quinn. Their trip down Nostalgia Lane takes readers just where most of us would have guessed. I won't spoil it, says the reviewer, even if those loose ends are all tied up in a bow in the first few chapters. Mitch leaves Memphis, ready to move on to a new chapter. Or in this case, it seems a whole new book that feels very little like a sequel to The Firm. The geographical leap in plot is part of the reason that The Exchange reads like a standalone. This time the drama is not legal, but financial, as Giovanni Sandroni, an Italian-British Scully associate, has been kidnapped in Libya and is being held for a $100 million ransom by some very shady characters. The money must come from Scully as the female go-between demands that no government or police be involved. The main drama comes from the ticking clock on Giovanna's life and the terrorist demands that take Mitch all over the world as he tries to raise cash. It's an intriguing story with the violence, shady dealings, and the fast plot that Grisham fans love. But here's the thing. There's not much law, and there's very little gritty, witty Mitch McDear. He simply feels like a different man. Mitch has become a devoted husband and father, a person who will plan a quiet night with his wife over, say, getting naked on the beach, stealing dirty money, and making wild demands to the FBI. Maybe it's one too many truffles, but he's shiny and perfect, even dealing with terrorists elegantly. And doesn't that go against the standard that Grisham set with this very character? In Chapter 3, when talking to his wife about Memphis, Mitch says, "Look, Abby, we made the decision a long time ago to live normal lives without looking over our shoulders. What happened? There is old history. The distance from these Memphis days, or those Memphis days, I should say, is felt, and with the exchange, readers may find that a character without flaws is the biggest flaw of all." I have read this book, and it is a good one. It is called The Exchange. It is a sequel to The Firm from many years ago when John Grisham was first getting started, and I think you'll enjoy it. Sounds like a good one. And we have time for one more book on this program. Let's take a look at a book called Tom Clancy, Weapons Grade by Don Bentley. And this is another Jack Ryan Jr. novel. The aftermath of a shocking crime sends Jack Ryan Jr. down a path that leads to international destruction in the latest entry in this number one New York Times best-selling series. The quiet of a Texas night is shattered by the sounds of screeching brakes, crumpling metal, and most shockingly, rapid gunfire. The auto accident Jack Ryan Jr. thought he witnessed turned out to be a professional hit. Jack may be too late to save the victim, but he'll be damned if he's going to let the hitters escape justice. He's got just one lead, a meeting the victim was going to. When Jack shows up instead, he's drawn into the seedy underbelly of a small Texas town and the cold case of a college student who vanished from its streets. Jack is left with nothing but questions. Who wants it to look like the victim was drunk? Why does someone want an innocent witness killed? And most of all, what's a team of South African hitmen doing in the Lone Star State? His quest for answers will take Jack from a quiet Texas road to the middle of an international conspiracy and may just cost him his life. The book is called Tom Clancy, Weapons Grade, and it's by Don Bentley. It's a Jack Ryan Jr. novel. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google Accessible Books. Call 888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers and website to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long, until next time.